This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to www.ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, I'm here with Professor Richard Sallies. He's the Senior Research Fellow at the Department of Earth Sciences at Imperial College. How are you, Richard?
I'm very well, thank you. Ready to go.
Excellent, excellent. What we're going to be talking about today is geology, and particularly geology that relates to the UK and wine. You've written a book called The Winelands of Britain, Past, Present and Perspective, out a couple of years ago.
That's right.
And that would make you probably one of the most eminent geologists in the UK about wine?
How very kind of you to say so. Probably, yes.
Probably.
It's a very small field.
I'm pleased we found you anyway. What we're going to be talking about is we're going to start off with the different soil types, or a couple of different soil types, and maybe just talk a wee bit about how those relate to wine. A lot of people talk about terroir in a big way and talk about all sorts of things. But in your view, what do you think is the most important?
Well, I think if you look at the distribution of vineyards on different rock types, you can see that vineyards flourish on rocks of every age and of every type. But what is crucial is the interplay of geology and climate. It's that interplay that determines the soil in which the vines are planted and the landscape in which it grows.
Is it an interplay with the weather, or is it an interplay with how the rocks are formed or the soils formed?
Well, it's a bit of both. The soil is controlled partly by the modern weather, but also by past climate. For instance, in the British Isles, a lot of the soils that we grow vines on now are actually formed during the Ice Age in periglacial, near-glacial conditions. So it's both modern and past climatic regimes that control the soil, together with, of course, the rock type beneath and adjacent to it. Rocks break down slowly with weathering, and that detritus then begins to slide down the hillsides. It's eroded, transported, and deposited as alluvial valley fill, as moraine debris on the edges of ice sheets, and so on.
The detritus, just so I've never really come across the word until I started reading your book. That's just the weathering.
Detritus is just rotten rock, posh word for rotten rock.
Okay, and does that form the soils in a lot of areas?
That's right. But soil, of course, will also contain a large organic component as well as just the inorganic mineral material.
Okay, so the rocks give you the mineral material, and then you've got the organic material like dead roots and leaves and all that sort of stuff.
Exactly.
Into it.
Exactly.
And that's what creates good soil and bad soil.
Exactly.
As a geologist, do you get excited by soils, or you're a rock man?
As a geologist, I try to scrabble my way through the soils as quickly as possible to get at the fresh stuff underneath, yes.
The rocks, the millions of year old fresh
That's
stuff.
That's right.
Rather than the more recent thousand year old
Absolutely.
Soil.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. When you've been looking around at different rock types and that you've seen vines growing in them, what are the key elements, do you think, for rocks and vines?
Well, as I say, you can actually grow vines very comfortably on everything from granite to sand to limestone to clay. But there are certain rock types that have more going for them than others. To take the downside of clays are normally highly porous with microscopic pores. So, of course, clays can get waterlogged. Now, depending on your climate and the relief, vines like a little bit of moisture, but they don't like to have their roots waterlogged. So clays, certainly in England, are not a good rock type on which to plant a vineyard. By contrast, if you take rocks like limestones are normally very hard, very brittle rocks, and so they fracture extensively, and vines can get their root systems going way down through the fractures to reach the moisture. There is a particular type of limestone that's very good for growing vines, and that, of course, is chalk. And chalk is the limestone on which Champagne is grown in France, and some of the finest English wines are grown on, like vineyards at Denbigh's, planted on the recommendation of a notorious local geologist.
That would be you.
Yes, actually. my cover is blown already. Now, the magic of chalk is that it's fractured, so it's always well drained so long as it's above the water table. But chalk is chalky. It's very light compared to most limestones, and that's because it's got a microporosity. Chalk is about 30 or 40% holes. Okay. And the beauty of that is that in a hot, dry summer, The vines would not, of course, have been waterlogged, but they can suck moisture out of the microporosity between the fracture systems, and they will have roots going right the way down along the fractures, down as deep as they can to get to the water table.
So porosity is the gap, is the holes in the chalk?
That's right. Porosity refers to the storage capacity, and we normally measure that as a percentage. And most sedimentary rocks, like sands, would have about 20% porosity. Many limestones, it's much lower. Chalk is higher, with about 40% porosity. And then the other important parameter is permeability, which, as one of my students wrote in an exam, is the ability of a rock to pass water. It's the transmissibility. The connectedness of pores.
Okay, so porosity and permeability make up, high porosity and high permeability are good for wet areas.
Yes, that's true, yes.
Okay, and chalk has both got high porosity and high permeability.
That's right, yes indeed.
Okay, phew. It's taken me a while to get my head around that. And clay?
Clay's highly porous, but lacks permeability. It's what we often call an aquiclude, because it inhibits water flowing through it. But, of course, as clays compact, they change into a rock that we call shale. And a shale is brittle, and shale, of course, will therefore often fracture. And to that extent, it's having petrophysical properties. That's the learned term for the relationship between porosity and permeability. Shales have petrophysical properties that are rather similar to those of chalk. In other words, they're fractured, but they have some microporosity between the fracture systems.
We talked about chalk and clay, but there's you see, in your book you mention three types of rocks.
Yes, indeed. We divide rocks into three genetic groups, named according to how they formed. And the first of these is the igneous rocks. And these form from molten material, magma, from deep beneath the surface of the earth. And if that magma cools very slowly, we get coarsely crystalline rocks like granite and gabbro. If the magma erupts at the surface as a volcano, we get volcanic lavas with lovely names like rhyolite and basalt.
I've heard of basalt.
All right. And then the second group of rocks are the sedimentary rocks.
And just before we move on to that, Richard, I'd like to just, the soils for, you talked about basalt and the granite, in terms of for wine and their porosity and permeability, what's the story there?
Well, granites generally have very low porosity. They are often fractured, and if you look at granite outcrops, classic examples, of course, are down in Devon on Dartmoor, and you'll see the granites are fractured. But normally you do need a little bit more porosity and permeability in granite. And that's why in some areas like Portugal, they actually used explosives to blast holes in the granite to provide places for the root balls of the vines.
Oh, okay. But once the vines are in place, they can drive through?
That's right. They'll go down through the fracture system down to the water table to draw up moisture. You can see the same sort of thing in South Africa, in the Cape Province, where the Paarl area is a granitic terrain.
It's called igneous rock.
Are igneous rocks, yes.
Yeah.
And then the second group are the sediments. And these form where rocks of whatever sort are weathered by wind and rain. The detritus is eroded by rivers and wind and ice, carried down and deposited in rivers, in lakes, and in the sea. Mm-hmm. And the deposits are mud, which ends up as clay, sand, which ends up as sandstone, and lime, which is largely organic skeletal shelly material, which as it's buried turns into limestone.
So limestone is basically the dead shells for
That's
fish,
right, dead animals, dead plants, the calcareous skeletons of those, yes.
And everything else like sand and clay is the sediment from...
Sand, the original mineral grains that have survived weathering in igneous rocks.
Okay. And sand, again, high porosity?
High porosity. Sometimes, of course, sands, as they're cemented into sandstone, end up as very hard, tight, splintery rocks.
Okay.
Really what we call quartzite. Okay. But there are vineyards on quartzite as well, they're fractured.
And the third type of rock was?
The metamorphic rocks, which literally mean changed. As our sedimentary rocks are buried by earth processes, and hardened by heat and pressure, they often undergo changes and they form a completely new group of rocks. We call them metamorphic rocks, and they have lovely names like schist, say it carefully, and gneiss with a silent G. And some metamorphic rocks occur where you have igneous. You're getting familiar with that word now. Igneous magma intruded into sediments, and you'll get a halo or aureole around that intrusion boundary.
Well, I'm a bit confused now.
Okay, if you've got magma coming up towards the surface, it's going to cook up the country rock as it passes through it.
Yeah.
And so you will get a halo around the magma.
Oh, okay.
All right. A very high temperature.
So you've got some sediment that just starts to melt as
it
a magma.
It cooks up around there, yes.
Okay. And does that form, that's how glass is made, isn't it?
You'll get some glassy rocks like that, yes, indeed. Most glassy rocks are actually lava that has cooled very quickly.
Oh, okay.
And they have a lovely name. That's obsidian and tachylite. Great thing about geology is learning the buzzwords.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Okay, so they're the main types of rocks, and the type of things when you're looking at rocks from a vineyard point of view, well, you can talk about maybe...
Well, more or less, you shouldn't agonize about whether a particular rock is igneous, metamorphic, or sedimentary. You should focus your attention on its porosity and permeability.
So how much water it holds and how much it...
That's right, exactly, and also on the landscape that it's generating, whether... In England, for instance, we're concerned about south-facing slopes, frost hollows, dry valleys and things like that. And we're also then very concerned about the soil that overlies the rock, whether it's just locally weathered soil or whether it's alluvium, river deposits that have been carried down, glacial deposits or deposits on the edges of ice sheets.
A lot of people, particularly in New Zealand, a lot of the good vineyards are grown on old riverbeds, the alluvial soils you talked about. Why is that?
Well, there are two reasons for that. You'll find the same thing in England. In the Thames Valley in particular, a lot of the vineyards are on old alluvial deposits, old river deposits. But that's not the modern floodplain. A modern river floodplain, because it floods, is great for water meadows. The cattle love it, but it'll rot the vine roots.
Yeah.
What we find, and probably the same in New Zealand, are raised river terraces on the valley sides.
Yeah.
And if you go down any river valley in the British Isles, you will see these river terraces. And that's where you've got nice flat gravel and sand, which is well drained, and it's above the water table. So the vines enjoy that. They can put their tap roots down to the water table several metres below. But the raised river terrace will always be well drained.
Okay, and so the alluvial, it's about allowing the water to drain through the soils.
That's it.
Are they quite loose as opposed to maybe some more compacted rock? And
that's right, because they're quite young. They haven't been deeply buried.
All right then, Richard, I think we'll wrap it up there.